Nino, all... "'And the civilians, unarmed civilians,' said Venturi. The messenger, who was a sub-lieutenant and very nervous, couldn't find the right words to explain that unarmed civilian was stretching a point when it was a 200-pound slaughterhouse man with a long hook in one hand and a flensing knife in the other. Young men who'd joined up for the uniforms and a bed all to themselves did not expect that kind of treatment.
"'Permission to speak freely, sir,' he tried.
"'Very well.'
The men haven't got a heart for it, sir. They'd kill a Clatchian in a wink, sir, but, well, some of the old soldiers are from the regiment, sir, and they're shouting down all kinds of stuff. A lot of the men come from down there, and it's not good for them. And what some of the old ladies shout, sir, well, I've never heard such language. Dolly's sister was bad enough, sir, but this is a bit too much. Sorry, sir.
Their lordships looked out the window. There was half a regiment in the palace grounds, men who'd had nothing to do for several days but stand guard.
"'Some backbone and a quick thrust,' said Solachi. "'That's what's needed by Io. Lance the boil. This is not a cavalry action, Venturi, and I'll take those men, fresh blood.'
"'Solachi, we do have orders.'
"'We have all kinds of orders,' said Solachi. "'But we know where the enemy is, don't we?' "'Aren't there enough guards here? How many guards does one fool need?'
"'We can't just—' Lord Venturi began, but Madam said, "'I'm sure Charles will see that no harm comes to his lordship.' And she took his arm. "'He does have his sword, after all.' A few minutes later, Madam glanced out the window and saw that the troops were quietly moving out. She also noticed, after watching for some time, that the guard patrolling in the hall seemed to have vanished. There were rules. When you had a guild of assassins, there had to be rules which everyone knew and which were never, ever broken. Sometimes, admittedly, for a given value of never. An assassin, a real assassin, had to look like one. Black clothes, hood, boots and all. If they could wear any clothes, any disguise, then what could anyone do but spend all day sitting in a small room with a loaded crossbow pointed at the door? And they couldn't kill a man incapable of defending himself. Although a man worth more than 10,000 Ankh-Morpork dollars a year was considered automatically capable of defending himself, or at least of employing people to do it for him. And they had to give the target a chance. But there was no helping some people. It was regrettable how many rulers of the city had been inhumed by the men in black, because they didn't recognise a chance when they saw it, didn't know when they'd gone too far, didn't care that they'd made too many enemies. Didn't read the signs, didn't know when to walk away after embezzling a moderate and acceptable amount of cash. They didn't realise it when the machine had stopped, when the world was ripe for change, when it was time, in fact, to spend more time with their family in case they ended up spending it with their ancestors. Of course, the guild didn't inhume their rulers on their own behalf. There was a rule about that, too. They were simply there when needed. There was a tradition once, far back in the past, called King of the Bean. A special dish was served to all the men of their clan on a certain day of the year. It contained one small, hard-baked bean, and whoever got the bean was, possibly after some dental attention, hailed as king. It was quite an inexpensive system, and it worked well, probably because the clever little bald men who actually ran things and paid some attention to possible candidates were experts at palming a bean into the right bowl. And while the crops ripened and the tribe thrived and the land was fertile, the king thrived too. But when, in the fullness of time, crops failed and the ice came back and the animals were inexplicably barren, the clever little bald men sharpened their long knives, which were mostly used for cutting mistletoe. And on the dew night, one of them went into his cave and carefully baked one small bean. Of course, that was before people were civilised. These days, no one had to eat beans. People were still working on the barricade. It had become a sort of general hobby, a kind of group home improvement. Fire buckets, some full of water, some of sand, had turned up. In places, the barricade was more impregnable than the city walls, considering how often the latter had been pillaged for stone. There were occasional drumbeats down in the city, and the sound of troop movements.
"Sergeant?"
Vimes looked down. A face had appeared at the top of the ladder leading down into the street.
"Ah, Miss Batty, I didn't know you were with us."
"I didn't intend to be, but suddenly there was this big wall."
She climbed all the way up. She was holding a small bucket.
"Dr. Lorne presents his compliments and says how..."